centuries, mankind has been fascinated with realms outside of our conscious awareness. Through a series of interviews with practitioners, guest speakers, and experts, Liberate the podcast covers all that and more, from health and holistic healing to the supernatural. We aim to educate, motivate, inspire, and liberate your consciousness. Everybody, and welcome to another episode of Liberate the Podcast. Today we're bringing in one of Liberate's longtime customers and a personal friend, Mitch. He has a way of kind of looking at all aspects in the world and trying to find the meaning within different life lessons. And, you know, that's kind of going to be our topic today. We're going to see where it goes, but about finding meaning and learning through the different experiences that you have to go through within life. So, Mitch, welcome.
Good morning.
And so tell everybody a little bit about yourself. I mean, you know, just who you are, maybe a little bit about what you do, the cliche stuff, and, you know, kind of what got you into, you know, kind of being a master of really looking at the dynamics of experiences and personal growth and overcoming them.
Wow, okay. My name is Mitch. By day I'm a social worker, and I do healings. I guess you could say on the side.
Now, when he says that he's a social worker, I mean, there's all different types of social work, but he does social work on Skid Row. Now, Skid Row is the biggest homeless population in maybe the entire world, definitely in the United States.
Yes.
And you have some of the most challenging individuals and cases that you're working on. So it's not just, you know, all social work can be challenging, but especially social work on Skid Row.
Yeah, I think if you're going to do social work, Skid Row is kind of the place to do it. Sort of like if you want to be an actor on stage, you're supposed to go to New York. Mm. So it's kind of a mecca, I guess, in my profession. I mean, that's one way to look at it.
Okay. So keep it going. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but he was kind of downplaying himself a little bit there.
No more downplaying. Okay. It's all Leo Moon from here on in. So I guess you asked in part how I started on this path. It started with Burning Man, which is appropriate since I'll be discussing Burning Man. I was very much a muggle, and I had no interest or awareness of any spirituality or consciousness very much, other than synchronicities. I was very intellectually curious about synchronicities because I found them so uncanny, and they would happen in my life in very blatant, powerful ways. And when I went to Burning Man, this healer who I ended up becoming friends with, she went right up to me. I didn't know her from Adam. And she just looked at me and she said, "You're psychic. You're not from here. You're an alien. You know that, right?" And so she started telling me things about me that I had never even conceived of. But the moment I heard it, you know, it just resonated very, very powerfully. And it's kind of like, you know, in the movie or in a myth, you know, the fairy comes along and says, "You are on a path." And the moment they say it, it cannot be undone. It's sort of like when you bite the fruit from the tree of knowledge, you know, your eyes are open and there's no going back. So I started at Burning Man and it kept developing that way. And I became interested in how other people were doing healing. And it took a couple of years before I started doing this work myself. But that's pretty much what happened, that I went to the burn and I started to find a way that the world and I made more sense. And I found the culture in which I made sense. And that is very resonant for a person who otherwise finds that they have a hard time manifesting who they really are in the world they live in day to day.
So what inspired you to even go to Burning Man in the first place? Like, you know, that's kind of for somebody that's not too spiritual to kind of take that leap into the burn in the beginning, you know?
Well, consciously speaking, I wasn't taking a spiritual step. I didn't know anything about Burning Man. I had just gotten a divorce. And it was kind of a low point in my life, and I was very frustrated. And my friend said, "Hey, do you want to go to Burning Man?" And I had never heard of it. I didn't know anything about it.
Oh, so you went blind.
I mean, I went more than blind. I mean, I didn't even know what I was missing. And I said, "Okay, sure," because when you're having hard times, you kind of say yes to anything. Mm. So my friend just said, "Okay, well, you know, get a sleeping bag, and I have an extra tent for you. And take a lot of granola and ramen, and we'll stop and get water in Reno." I didn't know where we were going. I didn't know. I'd never been camping before. I didn't know anything about anything. And when I went there, as soon as I got there, you know, it was like that blind lemon. music video where there's the little girl who walks around in a bee suit the whole music video, and she feels like very alienated and kind of weird, and people poke fun at her as being an outsider. And then there's the part where she opens this magic portal and everyone is a bee and everyone is in a bee suit, and she just walks around and she's like with her ilk. You know, at the last burn, my friend pointed out to me someone who carried a big sign that just said, finally, normal people.
Aww.
And that's such a huge thing, you know, when you go into a place where there's 70,000 people in the middle of nowhere doing all kinds of things, and you feel pretty centered and grounded because it's normal, that's very impactful. So I went to the first burn, I met the healer there, she had a huge impact on my life, and I ended up being friends with her. We ended up living in kind of a hippie house with several other people about a year and a half later, and I watched her do healings. And I was very, very fascinated. I would watch it and watch it. And I didn't really think I would ever do it as much as there's something about it that was very, very compelling. Very compelling to see her grab invisible energy and push it to the side. Very compelling to see her not physically touch people, but have them shake underneath. And I didn't think one day I'll do it, but I was obviously absorbing a lot.
Yeah.
And then she and I had a very big falling out. And then when she was no longer in my life, I went from doing very, very basic energy work to something more potent. I think because, you know, if someone else is the magical person in your life, it's very powerful to have a teacher, to have a healer, to have someone you can look up to. But eventually, it's important to become the person you look up to. It's important to become the magical person in your own life. So when she left, it created a big vacuum in my life. And, you know, vacuums get filled. And so I filled that space. And so by the time I went to my third Burning Man, I started doing what I would call big healings. And I remember the first one, we were camping with a guy. He was a widower. His wife had died 20 years ago or something like that. But you could really, really tell he was carrying her with him. I mean, almost as if the funeral had been, you know, a couple months ago.
Wow.
And I came back to camp and I was in a very different space. And I just kind of looked at him, and we had a big rose quartz on the ground. I'd say about maybe a 2 or 3 pound rose quartz. And I just, without really knowing what or why I was doing it, it was very spontaneous. You know, I just did it. I just kind of pushed him down so that he was down on his knees. And then I pushed him again so that he was sort of on his stomach with his heart on the rose quartz. And I know it was physically uncomfortable, but I really didn't care. And I started kind of touching his back, and he started bawling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nowadays, you know, you say, hey, like, would you like a session? What's your intention? I didn't know about that. I didn't know it was going to happen any more than he did. It very much came through me. And in a way, there's a beauty to being that innocent as to what you're doing. And he started crying like it was a funeral. I mean, he really, really started crying as hard as a person can. And I felt no pity for him. I mean, I wasn't cold. I just, you know, it's almost like you're a doctor and you're cutting out pus or fat or a tumor or something. There are things in the person that you want to get out. And his pain was something that needed to get out. So I was very aware on a personal level that he was suffering, but I knew it was the suffering going out and not the suffering coming in. So I was okay with his level of crying. And that was one of my first big lessons that, you know, to the spirit, pain coming in and pain coming out are night and day. But to the ego, it feels the exact same way. And I think that's why people guard their pain a lot, because they don't want to let go of their pain, because if you hold on to it, you're not going to feel it consciously.
Yeah.
Your heart always knows it's there. Your heart really knows it's there. But to your ego, you know, if you're going to let go of that pain, you're going to feel it. You're going to feel the letting go. And your ego says, I don't want to feel this. So I don't want to go to therapy, or I don't want to face my issues, or I don't want to take responsibility, or I don't want to, you know, be in a cabin in the woods for a week and just like listen to myself and feel all the crap that I'm going through. You don't want to do that. And I think that's why. So he really let a lot out. He really, really, really did. It lasted for quite some time. And the harder he cried, the more I just kind of said, those are the only words in English I said. I just said, good, good, good. Almost like praising, you know, like, good, good. Yeah, you needed to get this. Good, good, good. And it was the funniest thing, but it worked. It really worked. And it changed a lot for him and for me. And that was, I guess, the first time I sort of landed. Yeah, I don't know, when you're a baby bird, and, you know, whether it's your own instincts or the mama bird chucking you out the nest, you just kind of fall, and, you know, I don't think you even think to yourself, you know, I really ought to, you know, spread my wings and fly. But something takes over, and I really feel that first moment when I pushed him down on his knees, something kind of took over in me, and that's how I began doing this.
I really like the way that you know, looking at these different experiences too, and you know, since it's kind of like the topic that we're going on is, you know, your metaphors and the baby that just gets thrown out of the nest and you know, is forced to spread its wings and flies. You can look at it as a disaster or a tragedy, or you can say, what is the gift in that, you know? And so in that in that element with the gentleman that he put, you know, as he's feeling this pain coming out, but the biggest gift is that he no longer had to carry that anymore.
Yeah, it was a huge gift for him and for me. I like the bird analogy, I think, in part because, you know, birds will find islands that are uninhabited and settle on them if there's plant life. And once the birds have lived there for enough generations, they, as a rule, they almost always stop flying, unless they continue to migrate to other islands, because the birds don't need it. They literally don't need to fly, and so if you don't need something, you end up losing the ability to have it. And so that's why, you know, most birds that were nearly all birds that were native to islands ended up going extinct pretty quickly once humans, or particularly white humans, got there. Because they were hunted to extinction, or the rats that came on ships would, you know, eat their eggs, and you know, the nests were all on the ground. So the whole idea is that if you're not forced to grow, you really lose your capacity for magic. And they feel that, you know, me having a hard time in life and not living in a full resonant manner, or at least full enough to really feel in some sense I'm becoming who I really am, as Nietzsche would say, that was crucial, and that was kind of the moment where I wasn't just going to settle down. You know, what gets you to the island is the ability to fly, but then if you stay, you become stagnant, and then you lose the ability to fly. Mm-hmm. And the whole idea is that there are other islands, or there are other needs, or other ways to explore. So if I hadn't been so low in life, or if I hadn't gone so far off my path, I wouldn't have been so far on it. Yeah. So of course, you know, in a sense, you're never off your path, no matter how far you resist it. So that, you know, everything that happens on the path is part of the path. And yeah. If you think you're taking a really circuitous route, or you're going in the opposite direction, that's part of the path. And if you're trying to sabotage yourself, that's part of the path. And if you're not growing and you feel like you're in stasis, that's part of the path. And it's only our kind of judgmental self, as I was kind of saying about myself a moment ago, that says, oh, well, you know, I wasn't on my path. I guess, you know, it really more means I wasn't on the part of the path that I would recognize as forward. But forward is, it's another ego term. It's pretty prejudicial, you know. Like, God's never going to come down and, like, enter the room and look at you and say, ah, you're not really going forward, you know. You're sort of wasting time. It's true that some of our moments are clearly more fruitful than others, but, I mean, if you take away your biggest screw-ups, your biggest self-sabotage, your biggest mistakes, if you take those away, you're going to take away the best parts of you later on.
Yeah.
And I always think back to, I guess I think a lot about nature metaphors, but I always think back to this one particular species of tree that it's kind of, I think of it as like a Scorpio tree. It only emits seeds when it's on fire. It only emits seeds when it's dying. So literally the act of death is the act of birth for this tree, which is why I think of it scorpionically. And part of the reason it does this is the most fertile soil that you'll ever find in nature is the soil in a forest after a fire, because all the nutrients that was in all the living vegetation is returned to the topsoil. You will never find topsoil with richer nutrients than that. So that's the time to plant your seeds, you know, after you've lost everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that tree really is wise, and wise in how it lives and dies at the same time.
I love that.
Yeah, good tree.
So you had you know, something that happened recently that can maybe, you know, have this hit home a little bit more for people. And that was an accident that you had at Burning Man, right?
Yeah, hit home is a great way to put it. Hit because I was hit, and home because when you get to Burning Man, they always say to you, welcome home. And yeah, I was at Burning Man. Basically, I was on a mushroom ceremony, and part of my main intention in the ceremony was to become grounded, because I'd never really been fully grounded. And if you look at my chart, it has pretty much no Earth in it. I think I have Saturn in Virgo, and I have Chiron in Taurus, so I almost have like negative Earth. Like, the only Earth I have is deficiencies or things to work on or things to integrate. So I really lack Earth. And a lot of the theme of my life has, on the one hand, being the Scorpio guy who's into the depths, but on the other hand, being grounded, because you're not really going into the depths if you're not grounded.
Yeah.
And I've resisted it and gone into it, but resisted it. So I set this intention, you know, and I went really, really, really high up. And, you know, I'll talk to other people's as guides, or I'll work with others as guides, but it's kind of funny. It's like I don't use that feature on for myself. Like, I don't like to talk to my guides. I don't know, it feels like cheating at times. But at that time I did, and It was the first time I ever entered dialogue with them. It was almost like sitting here talking to you. And I remember asking them at the start of the ceremony, how do I reconcile being grounded with my deep need for intensity? And they didn't hesitate, and they said, being grounded is its own kind of intensity. Mm. Good stuff. Good stuff. So that was at the start of the ceremony. And at the very, very end, I was riding my bike, and it was maybe half an hour before dawn, so just right at September 1st. Sun and moon were in Virgo, which is all about service and perfection and working on yourself. Sun and moon are now in Scorpio right now, so it's more about a transformation. And I got into a face-to-face bicycle collision. The last thing I remember was her front tire and my front tire touching, and I could literally hear, it's like a little, it's a very like small sweet sound, like, and then there's a blink, and then the next thing I remembered, I was waking up on the desert floor, and it was the calmest I had ever been in my life. And the way I describe it is that I was kind of like a lizard coming out of its egg. Like, I just sort of looked around, and I blinked, and I looked around, and I blinked, and it was the calmest I had ever been. I had like a kind of absence of emotions. Not apathy, just super, 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 super calm. And she was still unconscious, and she and my bike were on my legs. And after a little while, a ranger came in, and the ranger was asking, do you know your name? Do you know where you are? And I said, oh, you're orienting me. I'm a counselor. Sometimes I orient people. My name is Mitch. I'm at Burning Man. You know, I was very matter-of-fact about it. And I said, I think I'm going to go home now. And the ranger said, no, you really need to wait for the ambulance. And I said, ambulance? No, I think I will walk. I know the way. I'm all right. And the ranger said, seriously, you really need to wait. And I didn't understand what the big deal was. And I even remember when the ranger said, can you move your legs? And I said, no. And he said, can you try? And I said, yeah, I've been trying. And he said, my God. And I think the ranger was concerned that I was going to become a paraplegic. But I said, no, the woman and my bicycle are on my legs. I think that's why I cannot move them. So they lifted her, you know, and I was able to move my legs and everything. And around that time, she started to wake up, and she was screaming, just screaming and freaking out and screaming. And I thought she was going to die. And as it turned out, she was okay. And I think I got the worse of it physically than she did. So I was glad that she was all right. And I saw the split karma where she got enough anxiety for two people. She got all the anxiety and I got all the calmness. And I'm not saying that from a judgmental or critical standpoint. I'm saying whatever the karma is between myself and the stranger, that's how energetically we both woke up. And we both were bleeding from our faces. We were both knocked out. I ended up going to the hospital, you know, and I saw my face and everything, and I didn't understand why everybody was making such a, but even when the paramedics came, they went to me first and they said, you should really attend to her. She's the one screaming. And when I saw my face, I finally understood, like my face was smashed in, you know, it looked like special effects. It was pretty gruesome, which is weird because it healed within a week. But, I stayed calm the whole time. Ended up leaving the Burning Man hospital and just going home. And I remember saying to the doctor, you know, it's funny, my whole intention was becoming grounded. And he said, well, you know, there's easier ways to do that. But for me, there wasn't. That was the easiest way to do it, was this, quote, accident. And I noticed that over the next several days, I was a different person. And in some ways, the concussion has harmed me, like, cognitively. Like, I have poor memory, and I'm very sensitive to light and sound in ways that I wasn't before. But overall, I've experienced, I guess you could call it zen in a way I never could before. And very, very clearly, that bike, quote, accident, that was the ceremony. That didn't happen after the ceremony. That was its physical integration. That was my ceremony happening. I asked to become grounded, and that's what did it. And I've noticed huge shifts in myself that I couldn't have attained before if I tried. And I mean, it's there's a couple small examples, but I'm really happy to share them because I think they're fruitful. I remember I once, my dog had the runs, and my dog went to the bathroom outside my building, but because she had the runs, I couldn't really pick it up. And so I guess my neighbor thought that my dog had left feces outside and that I didn't pick it up. So my neighbor got a bag of dog poop that wasn't my dog's based on it being much smaller than what my dog produces and put it outside my door so that the next time I opened my door, I saw a bag of dog poop open. You know, it's like a passive aggressive, I don't like your neighbor thing. And so I threw it away. And then I had a guest who was over there. And 2-3 minutes later, my friend said to me, "Boy, that really sucks that your neighbor did that. You know, do you want to find out who it is? Do you want to make a complaint? Do you want to?" And I looked at him and I smiled and I said, "You know, I had completely forgotten that this happened." Mm. And I have to tell you, you know, maybe it's the fact that I do forget things, but I don't think it's just that. I think it's an ability to be present and grounded that I haven't had before, that when people do stupid passive-aggressive things, I don't get upset, and I can even literally forget that it happened. And that was such a gift. I was so grateful that my neighbor left dog shit right next to my door so that I could actually see the ways that I was reacting differently. You know, you get old, the same old stimulus with a different response. It's you that's changed.
Yeah.
That was such a gift. It was such a gift because I think so often, like, things happen. Like, we get cut off in traffic, or, you know, our friend doesn't text back, or we're shortchanged the dollar, or whatever it is. And, like, this little voice in us says, "Oh, this is bad. And, you know, in the words of Castaneda, you know, your self-importance is picked at. And your self-importance comes marching out and says, you know, "I will not stand for this, you know, and how dare you, stupid neighbor, and that's not even my dogs, and what do you care, and why don't you just knock on my door like a human? You're not even a human," you know, and you produce this whole drama out of something small. And instead of taking something small and making it huge, I was able to, by doing nothing, you know, wu wei, doing without doing, I was able to literally let go of something that I couldn't. And I had one other experience that one was the one that really changed me. It didn't just show me that I was changed. The experience itself changed me. I had such a fundamental shift, you know, after the quote accident, where I felt different, I acted different, I sounded different. My family members commented I was different. Everything felt different. Everything. And I almost wondered if I'd become a walk-in, like if I have a different spirit embodying my body. Mm-hmm. I think it's just, I'm just more me now. But I kept waiting for the calmness to go away because I'd never been this calm in my life, you know, as far as a baseline goes. And I kept thinking, well, when I get back to LA, it's going to go away. Well, when I go back to work, it'll go away. Well, you know, when I have a bad day at work and somebody goes off on me, it'll go away. But I kept, you know, you keep waiting for the spell to go away, which is kind of funny because the whole thing's about being grounded. And then one day I was walking to work and I really hate my boss. My boss is not the best person. And out of nowhere, I started just perseverating and I started thinking, my boss, she does this bad and she does that wrong and I hate this and I don't like that. And I just out of nowhere, I was literally just walking from the subway to work. And then I suddenly kind of went, wait a second, wait. I don't do this anymore. You know, I'm grounded. But then I thought, wait, you know, and the whole time I'm having the thinking process, I'm still thinking, oh, and she did this, and she did that, and I don't like this. You know, and I kept going, and I thought, you know, grabbing myself and stopping myself, that's not grounded either. So I just watched. I just watched, Christina. I watched myself do this whole speech. And I had a very, very strong, I guess you could call it a schism, where I felt like where my flesh is, where I would call my identity, like the frontier where I end and the world begins, there was a split. And I saw there was one me that was a few inches outside of my skin. And you can call that me the ego. And he just, and I hit this. And I remember the first time she lied, it was this. But the next time was da, da, da. And then the other me was kind of deeper underneath my flesh and closer to the marrow, or maybe just outside of it where the bones are, and was watching that ego. And it was like watching a different person.
Interesting.
You know, like, so, yeah, it was like, it's like you're at a coffee shop and someone starts complaining about whatever and they get very dramatic and self-righteous and maybe they have a personality disorder and they're going off. Or you're Trader Joe's and someone's toddler just has a meltdown and you're just watching this person just lose it, just absolutely lose it. And so you're watching this other person and, you know, maybe you get triggered or maybe you get compassionate or maybe both or indifferent or whatever. But I just watched, and watching my ego was exactly the same experience to the observing me as watching someone else's ego.
Wow.
It was no different. And that's when I came to realize that my ego is as much me or not me as your ego or anyone's ego. It's not who I am. And I don't mean this in like some intellectual sense where I wanted to write an article about it. I mean, I was literally, and while this is happening, while I'm having this like kind of this Zen revelation,
I'm still doing it. And that's the whole point. It never stopped. And then, another thing, you know, and I went through like my list of I hate yous to her. And in this like half block, you know, in this like 25 feet of walking, I suddenly like got to see. And if you don't get grounded, you don't get to see. Because once the ego goes, you go with it. And so if I tried to stop it, that wouldn't have helped either. I literally had to just kind of watch. You know, I mean, well, I'm a therapist, right? So I'm supposed to watch. But instead of like watching someone else, I watched me. Didn't do anything. I just watched me. And then I got to see who me is and who me is not.
Wow.
And that was what I wanted to share about. And I felt that was like one of the biggest and perhaps the most beautiful gifts that came from this whole experience of the burn.
The ability to detach and to kind of have a totally different perspective on yourself, your identity, and your actions and inactions.
Yeah.
I like it.
It was tremendous. It was tremendous. And to really recognize that the egos that we all have, it's not who we are. And it's like my ego is as much a part of you as your ego is part of you. It's just these things that happen. You know,
yeah.
It's literally things that happen. And then we don't have to work to disidentify with them. If I think as long as you watch them, it's cool. I don't think that the ego ever gets, like, annihilated or disappears. Because, like, I think it was Superman 3, they made, like, an evil Superman. And then in the junkyard, the good Superman and the bad Superman, they fight. And finally, the good Superman, like, I think strangles the bad Superman or something. And the bad Superman literally just disappears. That's not mythologically appropriate. That's not psychologically accurate. Your shadow will never disappear. If it disappears, it'll come back in some other form, you know?
Yeah.
It'll reincarnate. It'll do something bad. But,
well, like you said, you know, with the birds, if you don't keep on, you know, evolving or allowing yourself to explore somewhere new or grow, you become stagnant and extinct. And so, you know, we're on this constant path of evolution. So like, yeah, maybe you conquer, you understand, or you move beyond that one shadow aspect, but not the entire shadow.
Yeah, you don't move beyond the shadow since the shadow is you. You and your shadow move beyond where you two were together.
Yeah.
It's not so much your shadow that you're trying to change as it is your relationship with your shadow.
Mm-hmm. And your relationship with yourself and the views and perspectives on these experiences that happen and how you can see how different you can act and react and what you kind of make that meaning mean after the fact, because you could sit and stew on something or you could let it go.
Exactly. And I like that you said it's you know, you're see concussion, I don't remember the exact words, but you said it's about your shadow and you. And I was thinking of the better version of, you know, that Superman conflict. It's in the Matrix where Smith and Neo, you know, the self, that big S self, and the hero in Neo, and the shadow in Smith, they have their final confrontation, and they fight, but at the end, if you watch, Neo literally becomes Smith. He lets Smith assimilate him, and you see there's two Smiths. And when only by becoming the ego, by becoming the shadow, do they unite, and is there a real sense of ascension and growth?
Mm-hmm.
That's how you integrate, not by dividing. You never evolve by dividing, is the whole point. I wasn't observing my shadow to divide myself. I was observing my ego just to watch, just to see, so that there was two parts of me, and I was able to remember that he's not everything. When I'm him, I forget that I'm me. But when I'm me, I don't forget that I'm him. And that's the crucial difference. If you can maintain a part of you that says, I am this, but I am not only this, that's how you can integrate shadow. And I think it's this writer, McGilchrist, David McGilchrist, he talks about the right and the left brains the same way, the two hemispheres. And he says, you know, the left hemisphere, it seems to exist solipsistically. It doesn't even seem to know that the right brain exists. It literally does its own thing. Whereas the right brain, which is the more holistic, expansive, connecting to
mm-hmm.
others, connecting within the self, connecting to others, that part understands that the left hemisphere is there and tries to integrate what's there. So you have these two halves. I mean, these two hemispheres are you. There's the part of you that thinks that that part of you is everything, you know, that inner narcissist. And then there's that other part of you that's everything altogether. So, I mean, if you look at, like, anyone, Dalai Lama, Bishop Tutu, I mean, even Jesus is, you know, kicking over tables and cursing in the New Testament, you know, everyone has their edge, everyone has their anger, their pain, whatever it is. It's not that your pain ever disappears, it's that your relationship with it changes. And
I think that's the, what, I don't know if it was the Buddha or if it was the Dalai Lama, but one of them says, you know, everybody feels pain, but no one has to suffer. Mm-hmm. And it's your relationship with your pain that creates the suffering.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that part of the reason that I didn't feel physical or emotional pain from getting my face smashed in was, well, maybe they guided me that way. And I'm really grateful to my guides. Thank you, guides. But I also think that I didn't resist it. It was okay. It was like right from the start, you know, I was in ceremony, including when I woke up. So whatever happens to you on ceremony is really part of your path. I mean, that's always true, but in ceremony, it's, you know, so much more true and so much more resonant. So if you don't resist it, it's okay. So I didn't feel the hurt. And even though, I mean, my face looked like, the right fifth of it looked like kind of like the Elephant Man, like it was all warbly and like triple swollen.
Wow.
It was awful. And then I had like blood.
That's an intense bike accident. At first I was like, how bad could you be injured?
Well, pretty good. I mean, I think if we were both going about 15 or 20,
at
each other, it's kind of like hitting a wall at 35 or so. But I had blood coming out of one eye, but it had dripped because I was unconscious sideways. So I had wet and caked blood underneath both eyes. So I looked a little bit like a Sith from Star Wars. Like I looked kind of like a demon who'd been beaten up, you know? Maybe that was my ego. My ego was the demon who'd been beaten up. But like even though I was completely mashed up, within a week, everything had pretty much healed. I barely had any facial marks. It was astonishing, and I think the only reason I healed quickly was that I didn't resist.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not judging anyone who has
and
a hard time healing, but
you didn't attach too.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
Sometimes, you know, and again, no judgment on people. Everybody has their own journey, but sometimes when people identify or attach to their illness, ailment, problem, situation, or whatnot, they have a really hard time moving beyond it because somehow it becomes a little bit integrated in their self-identity.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there's no question.
And so, you know, not giving it much energy or time or thought or, you know, over, you know, thinking it, you allowed yourself to really be detached from it. This is an experience that happened. That's all that it is, you know?
Yes. I was that experience, and I authored it, and it was such a gift. And that perspective was fruitful. I mean, really, like, it's something I've learned from doing my job, but here's the example I like to use. Imagine that you're just standing in line somewhere. All my examples are standing in line. Maybe that's what we're doing. And a stranger just comes up to you and punches you on the shoulder and goes away for no reason. You know, hits you pretty hard, leaves a mark and everything. Imagine the emotional impact. As opposed to someone who bumps into you twice as hard and looks at you and says, I am so sorry, I slipped. You know, you say, oh, it's okay, it's all right, you know. But if somebody literally just crossed that social line, punched you in the shoulder and walked away, I mean, you're gonna think about it, you're gonna relive it, you're gonna tell your friends, you're gonna Facebook it, you're gonna be angry, you're gonna check if there's a bruise, you're gonna repeat the story to yourself or to others 100 times. And so what you're gonna do is you're gonna kinda like walk around being this person who punching yourself in the shoulder 100 times saying, I can't believe this person hit me, you know, and the ego hits back, you know, no matter what happens, if the ego can, it will,
yeah.
You know, if the ego can, it will, I don't know everything about life, but I know that much. If the ego can, it will. And if the ego doesn't have that person to punch, it'll just punch you. And
yeah.
The way it punches you is by reliving and re-emphasizing and recreating this pain. You know, I remember a TED Talk I saw by Jill Bolte Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny, it's hard to
yeah.
remember things these days. But
the
Stroke of Insight.
Yeah.
And I read her book. Her book is even better than the talk. And one of the things she talks about is that before her stroke, before her brain damage, here I am complaining about my minor brain damage, right? But before her significant brain damage, she had kind of she was kind of grouchy or would have a temper at times, or she was just, once in a while, you know, her anger would get the better of her. But the brain damage took away a lot of her wiring. It literally took away a lot of wiring. A lot of the synapses were just blasted away. And so what she noticed is that when she would get upset just as easily as before, but it would go away within a minute.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact is, if someone punches you on the shoulder, within about 45 seconds, you know, unless you have a trauma, you're pretty much going to go back to baseline. Your brain's not going to re-emphasize it. What causes you to get upset is that you think about it, and then you think about thinking about it, and you think about thinking about it, and so on. So anything bad that happens to you, if it lasts more than a minute, that's you.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, don't get me wrong, you know, like, you know, when my father died, you know, it wouldn't have been appropriate for me to say, well, it's been a minute, time to go back. We're supposed to feel at times, but I would say the majority of our suffering is something that we just extend. It's almost like a magazine subscription. Like, yeah, let me just have one more year, you know, or like a snooze button. You know, I can stop this, but let me just be pissed off and self-righteous and whiny for just 5 more minutes. And, you know, the ego, you know, it'll hit that snooze button for years at a time until you finally just let go of the person who punched you in the shoulder, or let go of the neighbor who left the dog poop. And, oh, hey, neighbor, if you're listening, thank you, whoever you are. Truly.
I love it. So much golden nuggets. And, you know, we're going to be wrapping up. I do think that we should definitely have you on for, you know, there's so many different topics that we can explore. You know, maybe in a couple weeks or something, we'll have you on again. And I think that, you know, I'm sure that you'll get a lot about, you know, it's about the way that Mitch can just explain this with these anecdotes and these stories, and we could go on forever, you know? Is there anything else that you want to leave or share with everybody?
Well, something to leave. I guess I would just say that, you know, right now we have Sun and Moon in Scorpio, so it's a particularly apt time to let whatever is inside transform and let whatever is unresolved resolve. And if something hurts, don't try to stop the hurt, but go with it. And to sort of see that, you know, it's easy for me to say because I only feel my pain. I don't feel, you know, anyone else's pain directly, but you authored this. You know, whatever it is that happens, you know, however unfair it is even, you authored this. So the moment you author it, it's yours. And the moment it's yours, you're not its, you know, it's yours. And once it's yours, you're free.
I love that. Really a way to, you know, move beyond and set yourself free. Where can people find you? Of course, if anybody wants to get a hold of Mitch, you can look at liberateemporium.com, send us an email, we can get some information over to him. But do you have a website or something where people can contact you directly or anything like that? Or do you just want them to kind of come through the shop?
I guess people can come through the shop, or I just got a domain name, so maybe I will be making a website shortly, but if people want to, my email is myartman, M like Mary, Y like yellow, ARTMAN @gmail, myartman@gmail, or if anyone really wants to, yeah, I guess they could find me at the shop. That'd be nice.
Okay, so, you know, and we'll have Mitch on again, and maybe the next time we have him on, his website will be fully up and running. But if anybody has any questions about synchronicities or experiences in life that, you know, that you can kind of morph and have a different perspective and a different kind of notion around, you know, really reach out. And thank you for joining. Please feel free to you know, leave a review. That's how other people find us. So, you know, leave a review on iTunes. That's the most appropriate way. Of course, if you're listening on Podbean and stuff like that, we appreciate any feedback. And, you know, tune in next time. Hope to see you then.